Thanks, Johnny. I'm not calling. My sobriety date is 3/4/18, so God willing, I stay sober a couple more months, about 4 years. Like I said, my home group is a village group. And I have a sponsor who has a sponsor. My sponsor knows he's my sponsor. I make myself available to work with others. And I try and stay in service as much as possible. I haven't done this in a while. I think it was 2019. I had a little over a year, and I spoke at the other location. And a lot has changed in the last 3 years since I spoke last. Good things. And, you know, bad things happen to you, but I've learned in this program how to deal with those bad things. And that's a lot different than how I used to. This is looking at me.
Yep. Thank you.
Cool. No pressure. Sorry. Okay, so I'll kind of share my experience, strength, and hope, what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. Not going to go back to when I was a baby, but when I was young, I had a very addictive personality, and I used my addictive personality towards other things other than drugs and alcohol. I used sports as kind of like an outlet to kind of put my addictive personality in. I was one of those people who really pushed themselves to be good at sports and beat myself up when I wasn't good or had a bad game. I think I really found out that I could use sports to kind of fill a void that I don't think I recognized I had. And when I wasn't playing sports or I wasn't involved in anything, I definitely had some sort of void. And it wasn't until my first drink that I found out that I could fill that void a lot easier than playing sports or doing other things. I grew up in a household that kind of allowed me to try wine at a young age and do those sorts of things, watch movies I probably shouldn't have been watching at a young age. And one of the things I remember doing when I was probably like 7 years old is taking shots of Sprite. And, like, pouring Sprite out of the can into a shot glass and taking shots because I thought it was cool when I saw it in movies. And I don't know why that sticks in my head a lot. It evolved to, like, seeing people do cocaine and things like that. So I remember I crushed up some Excedrin migraine and snorted it, and that did not go well. Didn't feel any cooler after doing it, but... you know, I guess that was just one of those things, like, I wanted to do cool stuff, and, you know, I saw it on movies, so I tried it. My first real drunk, I was in seventh grade. I grew up in Lodi, California, up north, and I went to the same elementary school, and then in seventh grade, we moved to a small town of Lockford. And there, I moved away from all the friends that I had and grew up with, and I had to start new. So, it was kind of a country town, and, I was a kid who liked to, like I said, play sports and be with the cool people who I thought were cool at a young age. So, there wasn't a lot of that at this new school, so the cool people were the people who were doing graffiti in the bathrooms, were doing things that I wasn't really into. So I moved over there, and one day, sorry, before my first drink was my first smoke. So one day on the bus ride home, some kids in the back of the bus had a little one-hitter they were smoking weed out of, and I was interested, and I covered myself up with a jacket and hid it in the back of the bus. Thought it was really cool. I didn't feel like it did anything to me. But the next day when I went to school, I got called into the principal's office. And I denied the fuck out of it. I don't know if I have to watch my language here. Kind of, sort of. But I denied it. I said, I don't know who you saw, but it wasn't me. There's multiple people who said that they saw it was me, and I, like I said, I denied it. A police officer came and was like, okay, you're going to go get drug tested. So I was like, okay, bring it on. So my mom drove me down to this place where I got drug tested, and the drug test came back negative. And my mom made the cop, who was like kind of yelling at me, come back and apologize to me. And to this day, that may have been the most powerful I ever felt in my life. To kind of like have that happen was really, really cool. And it was a sense of like, that first time I thought I was invisible. Like I wouldn't get caught. It didn't matter what I wouldn't have consequences. And I think that carried over to other things later on. The same people I smoked weed with on the bus, who I got drunk with for the first time. My parents went out of town. This is seventh grade in the same town. My parents went out of town, and we decided to go digging in the garage to see what kind of cool shit we could find. And we found a couple of tubs that were filled with like kind of half bottles of different liquors. And we decided that if we just took a sip of every one, they wouldn't know anything was missing. And we did until I found this stuff. It was called Hot Damn. And I think it's like the equivalent to like a Fireball nowadays or something. But that stuff I had multiple sips because it was really good. And it went down smooth. I love those Fireball candies and tasted like it. Anyways, this all happened very quickly. So we leave the garage, and our plan is to head back to his house on our bikes. And I don't know, we got 50 feet down the road, and it just hit us hard. And we start falling off our bikes. He lived 2 blocks away. It took us an hour to get to his house. I just remember I was probably on the ground when I was on the bike, and we were just laughing and having the best time. And that was my first experience of something that changed the way I felt, and I really, really liked it. I really liked it. And, you know, I kind of put two and two together that I probably shouldn't take sips of 15 different kinds of alcohol. That may have had the wrong effect. But once we got to my buddy's house, eventually, I settled down on his couch, and I threw a pot damn all over his white carpet. And I was banned from that house. I could never go back again. But I didn't care, because I had found this kind of magical thing that could change the way I feel. And I wouldn't say that I was necessarily like feeling really bad, but it elevated everything. It made everything better to me. And that's when I just started sneaking out. Like I was a pretty good kid, and like I said, my mom would let me like try sips of alcohol here and there, but like I would never sneak out and go to parties, and that all changed after I found out what that stuff did to me. And you know, I knew that if I went to a party, I could get that same feeling again. So that's when I started climbing out windows, and started to drink as often as I could. That wasn't necessarily a lot. Like, I couldn't always do that. I say, like, they were, like, chill, like, letting me drink alcohol, but they were pretty strict in other ways, and the opportunities weren't always there to drink. In Lockford, towards the end of my seventh grade year, I ended up getting into a verbal altercation with my mom's partner. And my mom and dad divorced when I was one, so I've always lived with my mom. So anyways, I called up my dad, and I pretty much begged him to come pick me up. And he did. He came down and picked me up. I didn't know where I was going. I didn't know where exactly he was living at the time, but turns out he was living in Avenal, California. I don't know if you know where that is. Paradise. So anyways, I lived out there for a year. I went to eighth grade there. I was the tallest white kid in the town, one of the few white kids in the town, and once again, I found myself in a new environment and I needed a way to fit in. And over there, it was gangs and parties and drugs. And so that's what I did. Eighth grade, you know, like at sixth grade, you would have never guessed I was doing what I was doing a couple years later. Like I was completely different. And, you know, I drank a lot. It was, I wouldn't say like I drank every day, but I drank a lot. And, you know, I got shot at out there. I was doing a lot of crazy shit out there. Eventually, while I was there, my mom ended up moving to Hawaii. And, you know, after my dad picked me up, I swore I would never go back and live with her again, because I really didn't like the person she was with. And, all those feelings of resentment and disliking this woman went away when I imagined myself chilling on the beach with a bunch of hot Hawaiian babes surfing and all this stuff. So it didn't take very much convincing by my mom to come move out to Hawaii, so I did. And I started high school out there, my freshman year there. Once again, I'm in a new surrounding, having to make new friends. And out there, it's not – they test you. Like, I always joke around, like, I've done hard time in Fresno County. I did 3 days there. But it's kind of like I would imagine going to prison or jail for a long time and the kind of getting tested to see who you are. And Hawaii was like that on a different level. Like, when I showed up there my first day, some guy said that other guy was talking shit about me. So, like, either I was like, whatever, talk shit, or I go fight the guy. So I fought the guy. And turns out he wasn't. These people were just, like, messing with me. But, like, those were things that, like, I was like, all right, I got to, like, put myself in a position not to, like, you know. I had read up on Hawaii before moving there, and I heard the horror stories of people moving there and leaving in 2 months. You know, and living there and going through high school there, I got to see that happen. We'd have new kids show up. I remember this guy came from Montana. He was super red. I don't know why I remember that about him, but he was just really, like, sunburnt all the time. Anyways, I remember he was there for 2 months, and he got bullied and all this stuff. And the next thing you know, he stopped showing up to school, and his family moved. And, like, that's the kind of stuff that happened. You know, I didn't want to be that person. I wanted to fit in. So, you know, I went and got the biggest Samoan friends I could find. And, you know, I got in with the cool crowd. That was my thing. And I started drinking on the beach. And that was like, you know, every couple times a week or whatever. And then I started meeting people on the beach when I was drinking that were a lot of fun, and it became a habit to ride the bus down. My high school was at the very top of the mountain, and I rode the bus down to the beach, and I would get off the bus and go to the parking lot where all the homeless people hung out, and if I bought them a beer, they would buy me one. That was the rule, and I always had access to it. They were there like clockwork. They'd go to the store, come back. And it started with, on a daily basis, coming down from school, and it started with 40 of Mickey's. That got me a chill buzz, and I was able to, like, hop in the water and, like, not smell like alcohol when I went home with my mom. And then it went to, like, you know, moved on to, like, 2 Mickey's every day after school. And then it went to 2 Mickey's and 2 Sparks. I don't know if anyone remembers Sparks, but they're like kind of like an energy drink with alcohol in it. And I think the green ones were like 8% or something. Anyways, after the 2 Mickey's and 2 Sparks, I was ending up passing out on the beach. And, you know, I would wake up and I'd go to the, I'd jump in the water, because I don't know why I thought the ocean would wipe all the alcohol off me. But I'd go jump in the water and then go to the store. And in Hawaii, they have a lot of delicious local foods at gas stations, And one of my favorite things was called Spam Musubi. It's a block of rice with a piece of spam wrapped in seaweed. It's an acquired taste. And, you know, I pound a couple of those and then go meet my mom. And, you know, I was able to do that. And she never busted me. Like, she never, you know, asked if I was drinking or anything. And, you know, that was my routine. And I remember one time this was, like, right when I got my permit, she, like, let me drive home. And I was hammered. And leading up to this moment, I had her convinced that at a certain point of our drive home, we drive by something that smelled like alcohol. And I don't know why she believed it. It's the dumbest thing ever. Like, this field smells like alcohol. But, you know, I never got busted. And that's just another one of those things, like, where I think I'm invincible. I can't get caught. And, you know, that's kind of how my high school days in Hawaii went. I started selling things at school. And anyways, senior year, I decided to move back to California. And I moved in with my grandparents. My grandparents have some property up north with two houses, and I had my own pad when I got back. And I was, like, living the life, dude. I had my own house my senior year of high school. I could have all the parties I wanted, and I took full advantage of that opportunity to party as hard as I could. And, you know, jump forward a couple of years. I was 21, and I was working at a private golf course, and I was serving the golfers in the clubhouse, and I was just being able to drink on the job, and my job was funner there when I was drunk. And after work, I'd go straight to the bar and do deliveries for free booze while I was drunk, and that was just became a lifestyle. And I got to the point where I was buying, you know, 10, 12 of those little airplane bottle shots on my way to work to keep in my locker and run to the bathroom and take a couple shots while I was at work. Other substances came in play. And, you know, that was when I think I realized, like, I don't just like to drink a lot, but I like to drink a lot. And I surrounded myself with people who drank the same as me, so I didn't feel so different. And, you know, I think that's how I made it okay, was I just, you know, I have people that drink like me around. So, jump forward a little bit. I had this opportunity because my mom opened a new business in Maui, so I moved back to Maui with, an ex-girlfriend. And this time when I moved back to Maui was when shit got really, really bad. And so I got a job working at a hotel, and just to cover some things. So this girl I was with smoked a lot of weed, and as long as I gave her weed to smoke, she couldn't judge me about how much I was drinking. And that was, like, an unspoken rule, I think. And, you know, having somebody there that was, like, okay with the way I was drinking was not going to make me slow down. And it just kind of made me feel okay with it. And, you know, by this point in my life, I'm getting up in the morning, and I'm drinking a pint of vodka on the way to work in my car. In order to function when I get home or get to work. During work, I got the airplane bottle shots. And after work, I'm straight to the liquor store to get a fifth of vodka. And, you know, I'd have the fifth done by the end of the night. And that was a daily thing for me. And, you know, I'm kind of all over the place a little bit. But so during this period of time in Maui, my alcoholism, it always kind of went like this, but there is a point where it went like this. And, you know, my tolerance was just getting higher and higher. It got to the point where I was drinking 3/5 a day. And, that was from the morning. I as soon as I got up till, you know, I passed out eventually at night. And, you know, a lot of things happen. Like, I've always had this thing where I got away with stuff. And, you know, I've totaled 7 or 8 cars, completely totaled, and I have 1 DUI when I was, like, 19 for something stupid. I didn't even total that car. But, you know, like, that's just luck. That is absolute luck to be able to do that and not get in trouble. And so, like, one time I had this, like, old Honda Civic, and I backed out of my driveway, and I'm headed to the liquor store already hammered, and I hit this brick wall, like, 2 houses down. And apparently I hit it hard because the car was total. But, like, I got out of the car and left it there and walked to the liquor store because I couldn't handle all the traumatic experience I was going through. So I walked to the liquor store, grabbed the bottle, came back, went to the house, drank, and then went back to the car. And then I called my mom and was like, hey, this happened. But, like, no consequences. And so one day I woke up and I had this thing where so I got laid off of the job. Instead of firing me, they laid me off, which was cool because I was getting money. And in Hawaii, they pay you a little bit more than out here, so, like, I was getting a decent amount of money. And I didn't have to go to work, no responsibilities. That means that I can literally drink all day long. And this 3-month stint was pretty bad because I literally did just that. I drank all day long. And there was, like, a routine. Most of the time, I didn't leave myself anything for the morning, so I'd have the girl I was with go to the store before she went to work to go get me a fifth so that I could eventually go get more. And one morning, she had left, and we only had one car now because I totaled the other one 2 doors down. She left without getting me a bottle, and I was hurting bad. And, like, to the point where I couldn't even walk the couple blocks to the liquor store. I was really bad. And this is a point where I knew that some things had to change. Not that I was going to change, but I think I really acknowledged, like, I'm an alcoholic, but I'm okay dying an alcoholic. Like, I accepted an alcoholic death at the age of 26. And I went in. I'm miserable in the morning, so I go into my little garage thing. And in there are black trash bags piled to the ceiling with empty fists of random booze. And I took a red Solo cup and went through 4 or 5 black trash bags, and emptied every last little droplets of the bottle into the cup. And it took me a long time to do it. And it was a really hot day. And I just remember sitting there, surrounded by all these empty bottles with this red Solo cup, sweating super bad, just drenched in sweat, and realizing, like, what my life had, like, come to. You know, it was something, it was, like, kind of a mini flashback where, like, where I came from and, like, what am I doing? And as soon as I drank that red Solo cup, that pity party went away, and I was able to go to the gas station, and I act like it never happened. Like, it's all good. That was just, like, an instance where I vividly remember being like, you know, what the fuck's happening? And to move forward a little bit, because I'll get sober right now. During this time where I was getting money for being laid off, that's where it went from, like, you know, the 1/5 in a 12-pack to 2/5 to at least 3/5 a day. And during these couple months, I was drinking 3/5 a day, and I wasn't really eating much. When my ex-girlfriend would come home, she would, like, ask me if I ate, and I'd lie and say I did eat something. And, you know, it got to the point where I couldn't really walk. She had to help me to the bathroom just to get in the shower or whatever the case may have been. And I was literally just laying in my bed watching Netflix, drinking all day long. And I had this game that I'd play. I don't know if anybody's ever seen the show The Peaky Blinders. It's my favorite show ever, dude. I love that show. Anyways, they drink a lot in that show. So my thought was, like, every time they take a drink in the show, I'm going to take a drink right here. And, like, every once in a while, they go, like, 5 minutes without drinking. So then I just have to be like, well, I'm sure they're going to drink really soon. So, but, like, that's what I did. And I was, like, leaning on my bed, propping myself up all day long to the point my whole arm was black and blue. I found out later on that I had, like, some severe nerve damage, literally from propping myself up in this bed to drink all day long. I gave myself nerve damage. Anyways, fast forward, the girl came home. I was, in a really bad shape on the bed. She got really, really scared. She called her mom. My mom came over, immediately called 911, and, the ambulance and police came, and, that was like a threat to my drinking. I was like, I cannot go with these people because I'm not going to be able to drink in the hospital. I'm not going to be able to. And, you know, I think the adrenaline rush from them showing up there kind of gave me a little bit of, like, where I could, like, actually stand and not fall. So they're like, well, if he doesn't want to go, we can't force him to go. And, you know, I was like, no, I'm not going. And, they started to roll the gurney out of the apartment, and I just remember sitting on the bed, and I saw a police officer, and he was getting ready to leave, and I called him into my room, and I said, hey, do you think that I should, like, really go? And he said, if you don't go, you're going to die in this bed. And for some reason, I went to the hospital. I let him take me. And I spent the next 9 days and 8 or 9 days in ICU. I almost died. I had a fatty liver on the way to cirrhosis at 26. I couldn't walk. I had to, like, learn how to walk in the hospital, and I was really out of it, and I was in really bad shape. And when I got out of the hospital, you know, I was told by the doctor that you need to go straight to rehab. If not, you need to go to an AA meeting so you can get to rehab. And I did. I went to an AA meeting, and the morning I got out of ICU, the girl I had been with for 3 or 4 years was on a plane leaving, and I was in an AA meeting with really, really, really bad DTs with a black and blue arm. And they called on me because they'd never seen me. And when I tried to kind of explain what had happened the last few days, I couldn't even talk. I just started crying. I started crying like I've never cried before in my life. And I got up to leave the meeting, and a guy followed me out and put his arm around me. And he said, you know, it's going to be okay. And that guy turned out to be someone that was a security officer at the hotel I worked at, and he had been in AA the whole time. And you know, that was some kind of, like, a comfort that I've never experienced. And you know, I stayed sober for 4 months, and I my body got back to normal. I'm not going to say that I didn't relapse, because I did, but when I relapsed, I ended up worse than I left off immediately. And, you know, thankfully I had to experience what I needed to and hit those bottoms that I needed to in order to get sober and have the willingness to take direction. And, you know, I got a sponsor when I was living in Hanford, and, I went to a meeting in Lemoore, and I got a sponsor, and I decided to do everything he told me to. I became willing to be of service wherever I could. I followed him to every AA event that he went to. I read with the book with him. I did my steps. And, you know, those things, looking back now, are all from a power greater than myself, because I don't know if you've gotten from any of my story that I'm an alcoholic, and I had accepted that I was going to die an alcoholic death, and then now I'm over here doing step work in order to not drink. And that's not me. That's not me as a person. That's coming from a power greater than me. And looking back, I could see where my higher power revealed itself. And like that police officer that I asked if I should go to the hospital literally saved my life. What made me ask that police officer, what made me get in that ambulance that day, it was not me. That was a higher power. And I'm 100% sure I would have died in that bed had I not gone. And those are things that I'm able to look back at now and realize that there was a power working in my life before I even got here. And, you know, when I got that sponsor in Hanford and I started working my steps, I did it. I took direction and I did things differently than I did before. Before there was like that sense of like always feeling like I could maybe drink again. And, this time around it came to an acceptance that I am an alcoholic and I can't drink like other people. And, I never will be. And that's a hard pill to swallow for anyone who's new or fairly new or struggling, like, accepting that you can't drink like other people no matter what is a hard thing to really understand and to be okay with. And, that was something that I was able to do. And I've done, I did everything that was suggested to me, in order to get to where I am today. And, you know, today I have, coming up on 4 years, and, that is just insane. I couldn't imagine putting together one day, and, you know, today I have, such a great life. I will say that, like, you know, sometimes I really need to remind myself, I need to do all the things that I did, which got me to this point. Life gets big the longer you're sober. Things start happening because of AA and working a program and having a higher power. Things get good and life gets big. And the bigger my life gets, like, the smaller I can make AA. And, this program has given me everything that I have today. And sometimes, when I'm feeling squirrely or I feel really stressed out and there's like a checklist, like, how many meetings have you gone to this week? And recently I've been fucking bad. Right before Christmas, like, I took the week before Christmas off, and like for the last month I've been to like 3 meetings, and shit, my life got sketchy. That anxiety, all those shitty feelings that I had really, really bad, they start showing up. And the longer I go without a meeting or calling a sponsor or doing all those things, the closer I am to a drink. I'm not saying that I've wanted to drink the last month, but the longer I go, I'm that much closer. And just because I have almost 4 years and I have a sponsor does not mean that I'm not going to drink again. I can drink just as easy as the 2 dudes behind the building here were. I'm that close if I'm not doing all those things. And, you know, one thing that, like, recently, like, I've been trying to, like, these are problems that are not problems anymore. Like, I'm self-employed today, and, I stress out about work and things like that, so I try and put extra effort in doing other things. And really, the bottom line is, I can do all this other shit, but my life doesn't get good until I start putting AA before all that other shit. Then all the other shit just kind of starts fixing itself. I fill myself with all this anxiety, thinking like I have so much to do, I have all these things. But as soon as I start putting AA first, all of those things start to kind of take care of themselves and allow me to put one foot in front of the other and start accomplishing those things. And, I was not that girl I was with for a while. That was a really sick relationship, and she was sick too. And, I never saw myself as someone who would be able to be a good partner and be in a real relationship, an honest relationship. And, you know, today I'm lucky enough to have a fiance. I'm getting married in 2 months, which is crazy. Like, I never imagined that, like, these things would happen. And all these amazing things Dude, yeah. Whoa, I almost teared up. Dude, so something crazy. So I haven't cried since my first sports day, which was like 3 years ago. And not that like I'm not an emotional person or something, but I just haven't cried. So I have this real fear that when I get married, I'm going to start fucking crying so hard, I'm not going to be able to like stop. Like it's an honest fear of mine. But my life is amazing today, and it is all because of a power greater than myself that I work to grow the relationship with, and working the 12 steps and going to meetings and being of service, doing all of those things that you hear people say to do when you first come here. All of those things have granted me a life beyond my wildest dreams. And, you know, even just saying that out loud, it's pretty crazy because, like, I forget to be grateful for everything I have today. I can still find problems that are not problems. They're not. I'm an alcoholic who almost drank himself to death at 26 years old, and I'm worried about, like, having to do my taxes next month. Like, that is a gift of sobriety. Like, those are gifts. Like, I used to not know what taxes were. And all these things are just, you know, they're gifts of sobriety. I'm so grateful that there's a program that has the solution to alcoholism. And, you know, my sponsor is someone who I look up to because he has a very strong relationship with his higher power, and he always talks about, you know, one of his first things is like, did you pray? I call him with a problem. Did you pray? Did you like do all these things? And like, I'm like, dude, I know what he's going to say before I call him, you know? So like, sometimes I don't call him, but like, this guy has the busiest life in the world, but yet he's at every single AA event. He spends time with his family. He does all these things. And for some reason, I'm bitching about not having time to do stuff where I don't have to do half the shit he does. And he does it with a smile, and I'm super grateful. He's my sponsor. And, you know, I'm super grateful for all of you. Anybody in this program, you know, I can learn from. And I'm grateful for all you guys. You know, if you're new or fairly new, I'm glad you're here. You don't have to relapse. It's not required. You know, I went and did the research like a lot of us have. And, anyways, I know I'm getting close, but, thank you very much for asking me to speak. You know, every time I come up into a speaker meeting, I come up here having no idea what I'm going to say. And I pray before I come up here that God speaks through me. And I hope that some of you got some sort of message or something out of my share. And thank you for letting me be of service.